then just hit stop when you're done.
Good morning. So this morning, we're going to have a discussion about terminologies. Some of us, lately me included, eschew designations. They tend to pigeonhole us. They tend to divide us from other people, from our friends, from our relatives. In our day and age, where really everything is so much on demand, right? You don't have to subscribe to a cable television provider. Rather, you're picking exactly what television shows or programming you want. There's no such thing as denominationalism or religious movements in American Judaism these days. There's the shul that I go to for this particular service and this on the high holidays and the schools that my children go to, my grandchildren attend, the camp that I want. But it's no longer so neatly aligned that our schools, our shuls, our camps, whatever Jewish institutions to which we adhere and subscribe fall so neatly into color-coded packaging. It's just not so anymore. But and it's not just for Orthodox Judaism. It's not just American Judaism. You can see this very poignantly in the conservative movement in 2019. But it's all religion. Nobody wants to be designated a Methodist or a Baptist, an evangelical, or even sometimes a Catholic. We want to figure out who we are individually, independently, and if the other person disagrees with us, that's just not part of our culture anymore. It's not just religion, it's culture, it's politics. We have very little use for terminological definitions, which seem to divide us more often than they tend to unite us. But at one point in time, there was much to do about that, when especially in a period in which Orthodox Judaism was hanging on by a thread. According to most social observers, it was incredibly important for a growing, but slowly growing, group of people who more or less seemed to cohere with one another to fly under a single banner. And so this morning, we're going to look at the term modern orthodoxy. What does modern orthodoxy mean? I've written many, many books trying not to answer this question. What does it mean?
Originally, it was Samson or Phil Hirsch when they tried they're battling the reform in Germany and battling all the Jews converting. And so we're going to make our religion a little bit more modern by having the rabbi give a sermon in German instead of,
So Rabbi Samson Raphael Hirsch, his dates are 1808 to 1888. He never actually liked the term Orthodox. He thought it was too Christian. He preferred Torah Troya, Torah True Judaism. The Aguda has adopted that tagline since. But certainly, for many people, is the exemplar of modernizing, or at least trying to conform the trimmings of traditional faith to modern sensibilities. Absolutely correct, whether it's in the vernacular, in his case it was the German, in our case it was English. There's much to do over sermonizing in this country. The Agudas Harabbanim in 1904 put a ban on anybody who would deliver a sermon in English. Interesting. But absolutely, he is considered by many to be the forerunner of a modern orthodoxy. Sure, any others? Yes?
It's the ability to balance halachic observance within the context of modern society. Hmm.
So maybe more integrational then. And there are echoes of Rabbi Norman Lamb in what you just said, and he figures very prominently in our discussion. I want to get to these sources, because the sources are much more interesting than my commentary. But certainly a more wholesome engagement, suggesting where it is that synthesis and synergies can be formed between how halacha and how really lived religion. Think about just halacha, but how we do Judaism, how it can really comport with modern times. Absolutely.
Isn't it pejorative to begin with by the Hungarian Haredim? Well, you're following more the Samson Raphael Hirsch model. You're modern Orthodox, and you're no good.
Yes, there was vitriolic opposition. There's no question about it. So if we take a look at source one, we'll get to some of that. Some of these are collector's items for anti-modern Orthodox hate material. You're absolutely right. Source one. In 2002, in his 70 Faces, Rabbi Norman Lam writes the following in his introduction. If the reader is perplexed, everybody have a source sheet? There should be, I'm told, some in the back. By my use of the terms modern orthodoxy and centrist orthodoxy, it seems already to be bullocks at this point, the confusion is justified. The former term has been in use for some time to distinguish it from the Haredi or more reclusive branch of orthodoxy. For a while, I rejected the title because I considered the adjective modern, in quotation marks, as objectionable. It appeared as if we were boasting of our modernity when indeed we were hardly uncritical of it, even though we stand for engaging it openly and forthrightly. Skipping to the next bulleted section. However, this did not prove to be an inspired decision, so we went to centrist orthodoxy. Most people assumed it meant we were situating ourselves midway between Reform and the Satmar group. So what does he mean? Well, there's a prehistory of modern orthodoxy that we need to grapple with. Take a look at source two. We don't, unfortunately, have the letter from Omaha, Nebraska to the Rabbi Isaac Elchanan Theological Seminary. It doesn't become Yeshiva University until 1945. But we do have the rabbinic placement officer, Sam Zarr, writing back to Omaha on August 20th, 1928, please advise by wire what you mean. You can glean what the type of question was. By modern Orthodox congregation, our graduates, while American-born modern, in the very fullest sense of the word, are, however, strictly Orthodox. Do you intend to have family pews in your synagogue? So apparently, Omaha, Nebraska, had written to the New York yeshiva. This is the yeshiva. There is the yeshiva. Got into trouble with the lack of nuance there before. And Nebraska asks, we need a rabbi for a modern Orthodox congregation here in Nebraska. And Czar is put on alarm. Well, what exactly do you mean by modern Orthodox? We're strict Orthodox. And then he offers a question. Well, what's the configuration in your sanctuary? Is it family pews?
Mixed seating,
right. Mixed seating we associate most closely nowadays with the traditional synagogue movement in Chicago, which is in Midwest, which is altogether interesting. And we should, and I have talked about that, and maybe we should again. But certainly the conservative movement, we didn't have traditional synagogues until 1950. That's when the council is built. Hosted at Hebrew Theological College. So there's some association between a modern orthodoxy and mixed seating. Not just that, take a look at a Hungarian-born Rabbi Kutiel Greenwald in his Achlet Sara in Source 3. Uba'atzmi shamati. Actually, skip to the bolded section. Aval b'yaminu, I've given you the Hebrew, we'll read in Hebrew and I'll translate, but I also have reproduced an English rendering. Aval b'yaminu, ela yidabru b'shem orthodoxia moderni. There are these people in our days writing in 1939 about a modern orthodoxy. Vahar b'shalahem hu orthodoxi moderni, shakavana shereshut b'yadam, lishnot ligro lehosin. When somebody calls himself a modern Orthodox rabbi, he is offering what? That it is in his determination, or reshut biyado, to change, to subtract, ulahosif, or to add, kvei ruach hazman, based on the determinants of the time, im rak, shem orthodoxy alav, as long as he can still call it Orthodox, but orthodoxy modernit, maka asher lo ktuba b'torahi. You don't find this plague in Egypt. It's a plague, it's a makkah, and it's not even mentioned. There's no source for it in the Torah. Nobody could have anticipated such a despicable thing. You go down to the next bolded section, v'harbe ortodoxim odorni, yipatpet, they delve in, what is that next word? Spinoza.
Yeah, right.
The original of all modern heretics, Umeon, Mechabrim, Keila, and other heretical authors like this one, Zoti, Avodat, Elohim, Baliel, Shon Mublim, Chatitam, Alkomi, Asher, Yinatel, Davar, Davar, Nagdam, and this is basically the worst type of thing you could possibly imagine. And he says later that they offer late Friday night services in the summertime. Many people would not finish work, so they wouldn't get to davening on time at 4 o'clock, 5 o'clock in the afternoon. So very often there were Friday night services, but also something called Friday night forums. In fact, Rabbi Oscar Fassman, the longtime president of Hebrew Theological College, wrote an article supporting not late Friday night services, as if to say that we're going to compromise and allow people to work during the Sabbath, but then have Kabbalat Shabbat much later, sort of pool some sort of shtick, but rather to have still a Friday night forum in which there would be some sort of, basically an oneg, what we would call an oneg today. And this is the type of thing that is a modern Orthodox rabbinate. So Rabbi Greenwald has really nothing kind to say about the people who are waving the banner of modern Orthodoxy in this interwar period in 1939. And it's not just him. Yeah?
You're describing conservative Judaism.
I am describing conservative Judaism. Well, I'm not doing anything.
In this article.
I just report the news very late.
This has been and was a description of conservative Judaism.
And in fact,
more into the 50s and 60s than into the.
And in fact, before the notion that there was something called conservative Judaism, it doesn't really become cemented until this time period. There were students. My friend Mike Cohen has written a book called Schachter's Disciples, in which he makes a very cogent argument that there are many streams of Salman Schachter's seminary. Salman Schachter arrives probably the most noted. A scholar, a university researcher of Judaica at the time. He appears on the American scene in 1902. He dies quite young in 1915. He's only here for 13 years. And his students are really struggling with one another for the mantle of what the seminary, this is the Jewish Theological Seminary on 122nd or
123rd?
122nd
and Broadway.
2nd and
Broadway.
3080 Broadway. Okay. And they're fighting with one another for the mantle of Solomon Schechter, and there are many people who would prefer to call themselves modern Orthodox. In fact, some do. Others champion this term conservative Judaism, which had been around since the 19th century, but nobody wanted to own it. But eventually, one of not Schechter's immediate successor, but two after, would be Louis Finkelstein. Rabbi Louis Finkelstein would assume that position, saying, "You know what? It's time we call ourselves something. It's time we unite on principles, and call ourselves conservative Judaism." But there were many people, many rabbis and lay people, who would brand themselves modern Orthodox, when a term eventually would be discarded for conservative Judaism by the post-war period. They're absolutely correct. And thanks for the address. But at this time, but labels do matter at any moment in time. Source 4, this is a collector's item. Rabbi Uriel Zimmer. Someone with deep ties to both Samar and Chabad. Very rare that somebody would be connected to both. Some girls may claim. He's writing in a textbook. I think it might be one of the first Tznius textbooks in American Jewish life. You'll see why it didn't catch on. Some girls may claim that I shall join the X organization. So he doesn't identify who it is. Yet I shall not yield to any temptation and shall painstakingly observe, this is the girl, supposedly speaking, all the regulations, precaution, measures, etc. In practice, however, she will hardly be able to live up to such a pledge. The mixed organization, therefore, even if carrying no ideologically wrong banner, should definitely, under all circumstances, be avoided.
This is NCSY?
This is NCSY. Exactly. NCSY had really appeared in earnest in 1959, and this is what is on his mind.
Was he specifically writing about it?
What?
He's specifically writing about NCSY?
Well, he's specifically not writing about NCSY, but he is writing about NCSY. And you'll see there's another one he's not identifying.
Yes? Akiva, maybe.
Akiva.
Sure.
Needless to say, in this connection, that there is no difference between a nationwide or even worldwide organization and between a local, say, synagogue youth organization. So he's intimating it and saying as much closely as he can without getting the Orthodox Union quite upset at him. The modern Orthodox, using parentheses is a polemical term, as you see, type in its American edition and its Made in Israel equivalents, that presumably is B'nai Akiva, are equally wrong from the Torah viewpoint. Now here, modern Orthodoxy is clearly squared at people who are describing themselves as we might describe them today as modern Orthodoxy. What is the leadership? And before we get to that, skip a page to the first reproduced scanned copy from the American Jewish Archives for the question of conservative Judaism. So it says there's a copy. Right? Copy. This is from Henry Pereira Mendez, the rabbi of the Spanish-Portuguese synagogue, writing to one of the young leaders of the conservative movement. This is dated February 14, 1913. My dear Dr. Adler, Dr. Schechter, so this is 1913, so he's still alive, is Solomon Schechter, and Rabbi Cohn have both had several interviews with me concerning the proposed Adat Yeshurin or Union for promoting traditional Judaism in America. I have carefully examined the preamble to the Constitution and the sketch of the Constitution sent to me. At this time in 1913, what will become conservative Judaism is ready to furnish what is today the United Synagogue, their congregational body. And this was the, too clunky term that they were thinking about before they came up with the United Synagogue, which was drawing from England. In order to explain my views, so here is the head of the Orthodox Union, more or less a paper organization at this time, writing to the young leadership of the seminary. In order to explain my views to you, let us for a moment agree for the following definitions, even if they are not exactly correct. I should say, again, while it is my voice you are hearing, these are his views from 1913, not my own. First, so he's going to give you a sociological survey of the different types of Jews in this country. First, Russian Orthodoxy. This is the Orthodoxy which insists upon a certain ritual and certain forms, but objects to English sermons. Here you have it. Has little or no decorum. Fails to hold its young men and young women. Refuses in its schools Hebrew and religious education to girls, and cares little whether women and girls attend religious services or not. It also insists upon such customs as the shetel, and in a word, degrades womanhood, as you and I understand it. Interesting that he is defining Russian Orthodoxy based almost completely on its attitude towards women, which is just really, really interesting. You think about that. Certainly it happens today very frequently, but already in 1913, definitionally, it was determined on its stakeholdership with women. Two, modern Orthodoxy, as represented by, for example, your and my congregation. So here is somebody suggesting that here I run an Orthodox congregation. You are a JTS man running your own congregation. We define ourselves both as modern Orthodoxy. Let's collaborate. And several Ashkenaz congregations, because he was Sephardic, Spanish, Portuguese, such as those in Baltimore, Philadelphia, and Montreal, this Orthodoxy resists innovations such as organs, pews, that's mixed seating, and disuse of a tallit, female voice in the choir, Christians in the choir, etc. Third, so he's offering something different for conservative Judaism. Let this term mean the Judaism which permits some of the innovations named. All right, and then fourth, he has Reform Judaism and Radical Reform. So here you understand just how confused the labeling, the alphabet soup of American Judaism is at the time. And he meant this quite seriously.
Haven't changed.
Haven't changed. Okay, we got to correct it.
Wow.
Going back to some of these sources. So some people said, you know what, this hasn't changed. Absolutely right. And I am sick and tired of using terminology. And one of those young leaders in 1960 was a young, very, very young rabbi in Springfield, Massachusetts, in Yeshiva University. At this time it is called that, Yeshiva University, something of a prodigy, but not very, very well known at that time. Somebody named Norman Lamb, source 5. There is nothing world-shaking. Something source 5. World-shaking about the problem of whether the name of authentic Judaism in our contemporary confused age be called Orthodox, traditional, or anything else. There is nothing particularly sacrosanct about the name Orthodox or any other such appellation. Ideally, our attitude should be that no adjective is the best adjective. We are Jews. Now, in saying this term, which seems to be a catch-all, obviously people who do not adhere to what he's describing as Jewish, therefore, are deeply problematic in this. But we are Jews, and our faith and practice is Judaism, unqualified, uncompromised, undiluted. Once we agree to an adjective of any kind before the name Judaism, we have willy-nilly implied our assent to the co-validity of other interpretations of Judaism. While this has grievous implications for intra-faith dialogue with Reform and Conservative, certainly, what is Rabbi Lamb suggesting about the use of the term modern orthodoxy, orthodoxy, or anything like that?
Is he basically saying, like we're Jews, but like his view of Judaism?
Right. He is suggesting that I am a Jew. I don't want anybody to claim a mantle to what Judaism ought to be. He's not denying the Jewishness. He is not suggesting that people who do not subscribe to his form of Judaism have to necessarily convert. I don't think he ever would have suggested such a thing. And this is an ardent polemic, first and foremost. But he is tired of using a term that would appear before Judaism because, number one, it gives credence to other terms which precede Judaism, so Reform Judaism, Orthodox Judaism, or simply, I'm going to own Judaism. And we should embrace that without terminological prefixes. So that's Rabbi Lamb in 1960. Other people seem to agree. Take a look. Only 6 years later, Rabbi Irving Yitz Greenberg, somebody who would not agree when getting to much fighting with Rabbi Lamb in the 70s and 80s. Source 6. The modernist assumes that modern culture is normative and that Torah must be cut to its measure. That's what the modernist thinks. It's about compromise. I reject this. And I'm a severe critic of modern culture, and then in a parenthetical note, and of aspects of modern Orthodox, a term which I detest, says Rabbi Yitz Greenberg in 1966. He would move away from this as soon as many people would. So nobody seems to want to own modern Orthodoxy, possibly because it's freighted with certain connotations which refer to what's become conservative Judaism in full bloom, and certainly in this time in the 60s, as many, many Jews, third establishment Jews, are moving to the suburbs, this is where conservative Judaism is conquering, it's becoming conservative Judaism in many ways becoming American Judaism. And so Orthodox leaders are resisting, they're really combating. They're battling with conservative Judaism, and they certainly do not want to lay claim to a modern orthodoxy, a term which only a generation ago could have meant either an orthodox or what we would refer nowadays to conservative Judaism. It's freighted with too much meaning to bear. But then something's changing. Take a look at page 7. We who are known. Now Rabbi Lamb has left Springfield and is now the rabbi of the Jewish Center in Manhattan, something of a promotion. He's wearing coattails at this point and a top hat. We who are known, I was a rabbinic intern for a year at the Jewish Center. I was allowed to do everything but wear the top hat. We who are known, for better or for worse, as modern Orthodox. So other people are labeling or designating Rabbi Lamb modern Orthodox, except as both an integral part of our Weltanschauung and as the basis of our community structure, the idea of uniting within ourselves two worlds, that of Judaism and that of the larger culture. It's not about compromise. It's about that synthesis, that integration of how to make sure that both fit into one religious packaging. The one that is expressed in Western civilization, its science and technology and humanities. Following Rabbi Lamb's sermons, 1 year later, not even 6 months later, I even confess that I am uncomfortable, this is source 8, with the title Modern Orthodox. I'm just talking about it some more. There's an arrogance about this assertion of modernity which should give offense to any intelligent and sensitive man. There is no better term that I have found, but I flinch when I articulate the words. He's not embracing it at this point, but he's starting to own it. I don't like it, I flinch, but there's really no better term. He's moved very far away from I am Judaism and nobody else is, to somehow passively agreeing, I won't say embrace yet, a modern orthodoxy. Around that time, other people are still not willing to use the term. Take a look in Source 9, Rabbi Emanuel Rachman, a rabbi of significant note, was the rabbi of the largest Orthodox congregation on the East Side. Rightly or wrongly, in Source 9, one Jewish sociologist, Charles Liebman, has named me as an ideologist, I don't know if you need an MD to be an ideologist, of modern Orthodoxy. However, one can hardly regard modern Orthodoxy as a movement. So there's some scholar out there who wants to say that I'm the head of a so-called modern Orthodoxy, but I don't even think you can call modern Orthodoxy a movement, he says. It is no more than a coterie of a score of rabbis in America and in Israel whose interpretations of the tradition have won the approval of Orthodox intellectuals who are knowledgeable in both Judaism and Western civilization. None of the rabbis feels that he is articulating any position that cannot be supported by reference to authentic Jewish sources. They don't call themselves modern Orthodox. They're not. Modern is not modifying anything Orthodox, says Rabbi Rachman. They're all just doing Orthodox. None wants to organize a separate rabbinic body, and several have rejected an attempt to publish an independent periodical, because they did not wish the remotest possibility that this form of separatism, and this is 69, separation still has severe indications, be interpreted as a schism in Orthodoxy. I, no less than they, deny any claim to innovation. Nobody wants it. Nobody wants modern Orthodoxy. It's still being used, and before we get to source 10, let's look at some of the archival sources. So if you take a look, and here, traditional Judaism, traditional synagogue will appear. A letter from Rabbi Israel Klavan, the executive director of the Rabbinical Council of America. At this time, basically, the rabbinical group that represents the alumni of Reitz of Yeshiva University and Hebrew Theological College. Dear Rabbi Fassman, we have just had word from Atlanta, which seems disturbing. With reference to the... I've learned my lesson, is that when you talk about Chicago too much, invariably, somebody you're speaking to is related. That's definitely true. Chicago and Cleveland have the highest percentage of locally born Jews, 57%. So, meaning 57% say that they were born, and usually second or third generation, Chicago. So I've learned my lesson, now I just talk about Atlanta. We have just had word from Atlanta, which seems disturbing, with reference to the congregation where Rabbi Mossman, Sidney Mossman, was a musmach of the Hebrew Theological College. He had just been appointed the rabbi of Sherith Israel. He had succeeded Rabbi Tobias Geffen. Rabbi Geffen, you're all welcome. What is he famous for?
He was the only outside family member who had the ingredients to Coca-Cola.
Exactly right.
No, make it kosher.
Do you know how it happened? Very briefly. We don't have time, but I have to tell the story in brief. Thank you very much. Rabbi Tobias Geffen was alarmed because...
Another cousin family, Bella Geffen. Yeah.
So Rabbi Tobias Geffen was stationed, was called, I think he should have been called Rabbi Geffen, but he was called the Rabbi Moshe Feinstein of the South. It's both kind, it's also belittling Rabbi Geffen's own station. He was his own person. Rabbi Geffen was alarmed because a rabbinical journal, Hapardes, actually coming out of Chicago, reported that Coca-Cola was kosher. He knew better, that it used glycerin in its ingredients. Everybody knew that. Nobody knew the secret formula, though. But Rabbi Geffen had an in, because Rabbi Geffen had a brilliant daughter who was particularly brilliant in the field of trigonometry. And there was a vice president for Coca-Cola. Rabbi Adam Mintz has a very lengthy article about this, which is quite interesting, exhilarating even. Rabbi Geffen's daughter was Miss Geffen, would become valedictorian of the public school. She was tutoring little Miss Cohn, whose father was the vice president of Coca-Cola, in mathematics. So Rabbi Geffen, he had a favor to call on from Cohn. He said, "Look, everybody's drinking Coca-Cola. I got to do something. Can you please reveal to me the ingredients and take me to the plant to certify Coca-Cola?" So that's exactly what happened. Then Rabbi Pardes said, "Ah, it's kosher lepesach." So I do all over. So the formula is a secret. If you look in Leit Tuvia, Rabbi Geffen's collected responsa, you'll see that instead of using the names of ingredients, he uses symbols. But it's recording, all right. But if you take a look at Rabbi Geffen's papers at the American Jewish Historical Society, where you have the earlier galleys, the earlier proofs for Leit Tuvia, you have the recipe without the coded symbol. So if any of you would like to commute Coca-Cola, or simply hold them ransom, lest you send it to Pepsi, just go to the American Jewish Archives and ask for the relevant call number. So Rabbi Geffen was the rabbi at Sheret Israel, where Sidney Mossman would assume the mantle of rabbi, congregational rabbi of his congregation, at a time in which there were major court cases in Louisiana, in Ohio, and in Michigan, over transitioning in a supposedly Orthodox congregation to mixed pews and whether or not that violated a synagogue constitution. We have just heard word from Atlanta that Rabbi Mossman, its rabbi, and its plans for the new building and the elimination of the mechitza therein. Here is what we have learned. And Rabbi Gatchet, it appears, I did not make any of that stuff up. You have proof I didn't make it up. Is in definite opposition. Very often a rabbi emeritus has little power at this point, to the removal of the mechitza, and is said to have stated that he will not worship in the new structure. Don't call it a synagogue, a structure. On the other hand, Rabbi Mossman is said to be encouraging of mingling of the sexes. And he goes on to explain the minority and the like. And this is a letter to Rabbi Fossman, who's the president of Hebrew Theological College, appealing to him, please do something about your alumnus, about Rabbi Mossman. Turn the page. So this was April 25th, so 3 days later, so it arrives, presumably took 2 or 3 days to arrive to him, and Rabbi Fassman dashes off a letter to Rabbi Mossman. "Dear Sidney, a Mr. Horowitz of your congregation phoned me." So he didn't just get a letter from Mr. Clayton, but he got a member of the Orthodox contingent in Atlanta. "Phoned me to say that a group of the congregation is going to fight against mixed seating. The rabbinical council," this is the letter we just read, "has written me that Rabbi Geffen opposes mixed seating and has stated he will not worship in a synagogue." And Rabbi Fassman implores somebody who went to, I think, rabbinical school, I think he's a little bit older than Rabbi Mossman, to please understand that may I strongly urge, summarize, it's right here, in the last paragraph, "may I strongly urge, after you read these lines, to weigh them very carefully in your heart and mind, and phone me to discuss what will be the best steps for you to take from this point on. I assure you of my earnest desire to be helpful and to protect your good name. There is perhaps more at stake in your personal career than might seem visible on the surface." Turn the page. What did Rabbi Mossman respond? Well, he did not. "Dear Sid," he waited about 2 weeks, "I am surprised that I have this Rabbi Fassman again. I have not heard from you in reply to my last letter. Meanwhile, the Rabbinical Council of America has called me from New York to join with the council in helping to preserve the tradition in your synagogue." So he's very much opposed to the implementation of mixed seating. "As you can readily understand, the yeshiva," say it correctly, "will cooperate with the Rabbinical Council of America, since it is," and this is my point, "the official spokesman for all the modern Orthodox group in the country. So here's Rabbi Fassman. In fact, the HTC constitution, the bylaws, would be amended in 1960 to describe it as a modern Orthodox congregation, institution. So it's in the air. So I don't want to belie the issue and say it's a confused term. Many people are publicly still eschewing. They do not want to use the term, but other people seem to be embracing it. Now go back to our sources. Sorry to make it flip back and forth. So everybody's rejecting. Here we're holding by the end of the 1960s. Rabbi Lamb writes an article in the OU Journal, very popular, well-read at that time, called Jewish Life. It's been succeeded now by Jewish Action. May, June, 1969. Basically, the same time that Rabbi Rachman is writing his particular paragraph about denying there is such a thing as modern Orthodoxy, and that he is the leader of it. Writes Rabbi Lamb, the challenge to our intellectual leadership is clear. It's called modern Orthodoxy identity crisis. To formulate the worldview of modern Orthodoxy in a manner that is halakhically legitimate, philosophically persuasive, religiously inspiring, and personally convincing. It's actually, I think a year or two ago, a reporter called me up and said, how do I define modern Orthodoxy? So I just said, you don't need me, it's not Rabbi Lamb. Speaks much better than this. Anyway, it is a tall order, admittedly, but one which we must fill, if the great centrist mass of American Orthodox Jews is not to be pulled apart in all directions, as they stagnate in importance and in articulateness, for want of a clear world view to which they can feel fully committed in good conscience. Skipping source 11 for a second, source 12, so 3 years later, Rabbi Lamb is fully embracing it. Now it is no secret that I identify with what is called modern Orthodox Judaism. It's a full embrace. Within 12 years, Rabbi Lamb has gone from saying, I don't want to call myself Orthodox, let alone modern Orthodox, I just want to be a Jew, to saying, you know what? I'll be the leader of modern Orthodoxy. Nobody else wants it. Why not? I have written about it. I advocate it. Same man. Same person. I defend it. I preach it. But to you, my friends, and this is right in the Jewish Center, who are within this camp of modern Orthodoxy, I confess my worries. And he was a critical observer and was somebody who constantly reimagined and reviewed, like any good leader, of what are the tenets of his faith, what exactly did he believe in, what are the institutions that he's a part of, and so you see that evolution in his own thought alone. Rabbi Chaim Dov Keller, in source 11, going back for a second, notices both Rabbi Lamb and Rabbi Rachman, and basically Rabbi Keller, of course, is one of the Rosh Yeshiva, still he should live and be well, of Itzel's Yeshiva. When he went to Yeshiva University, he went by Henry Keller. He actually resigned from the student council for a mixed, it was called the Dean's Affair. When he was overruled as president, he said, if we're going to have an open Dean's Night reception of boys, of young men and young women together, then I resign. That's exactly what he did. He resigned, and he went to Tufts. If you look, he basically says in source 11, thank goodness that if somebody is going to grab hold of modern Orthodoxy, it should be Rabbi Lamb and not Rabbi Rachman, which is interesting. Not to say that our interest here is who's right or who's wrong, Rabbi Rachman or Rabbi Lamb, but it's interesting that here you have observers really take notice of these terms, who's grappling with them and who's willing to own it and who's willing to defer to somebody else, which I think is really, really interesting. Sorry that I'm going so fast. There's so much to review. The last two sources, then I'll take a break. Rabbi Gilbert Klapman, the outgoing president of the Rabbinical Council of America, he just passed away a number of years ago. Although RCA members, in source 13, like to consider themselves as centrists, we are being drawn to the right by the adamant inflexibility of those who are at the right. And it's a call to be modern Orthodox again, but he's using this term, centrist Orthodoxy, and here you have Rabbi Lamb in source 14 coming full circle. We seem to be suffering from a terminological identity crisis. See, his previous article in 69 had identity crisis, and he's returning to this term again in the mid-1980s. We now call ourselves, as Rabbi Klapperman used the term as well around that same time, centrist Orthodoxy. There was a time not too long ago, again, source 14 at the very bottom, when we refer to ourselves as modern Orthodox. Others tell us that we should call ourselves simply Orthodox. Well, he himself did, not even in 1960, without any qualifiers, and leave it to other Orthodox groups to conjure up adjectives for themselves. I agree with the last view in principle, but shall defer to the advocates of centrist Orthodoxy for two reasons. First, it is a waste of intellectual effort and precious time to argue about titles when there are so many truly significant issues that clamor for our attention. In no way should the choice of one adjective over the other be invested with any substantive significance or assumed to be a signal of ideological position. So I leave it as a question for 3 minutes. Rabbi Lamb suggests, you know, there's more to talk about than am I a centrist Orthodox Jew, am I a modern Orthodox Jew, am I a black hat Jew, a yeshivish Jew, a Hasidic, well, Hasidic maybe is altogether different. Do titles matter? For Rabbi Lamb, at certain points in time, they certainly did matter. What is good, what is bad? And what do we learn from this, what I call a usable past? This discussion isn't just an interesting episode in how you designate yourself religiously. Is there still room to debate about these designations, these monikers? Are they relevant today? Do we need them today? And what do they do? What do they do? Yes?
I think they separate people.
Okay.
They create a distance. You're modern Orthodox, or you're centrist, I don't know, I'm not clear what centrist is, but you're more to the right, you're more to the left.
One of my teachers, Professor Sylvia Fishman, has actually in a book very recently identified that she actually plotted a modern Orthodoxy that's separate from, they can coexist and simultaneously mean different things, which is interesting.
When you do shidduchim, they ask you those questions. Does your mother cover her hair? Does she put a white tablecloth on?
Well, sometimes they drill even more deeply. So the first image in my my modern Orthodox reader is from a YU Connects, which is Shidduchin, in which you are told to designate yourself either modern Orthodox or modern Orthodox Machmer. Modern Orthodox Makeup. It means you're modern Orthodox, but you're on the Machmer end of it. I'm sorry, Melissa and I were married by then. I had no need for, I'm sure it helps many, many people. I did not have to indicate my modern Orthodox styling at that moment. Yes?
The question becomes, forget about the terms, is the YU kind of orthodoxy going to the right more and valuing secular education less and putting more of an emphasis on either Torah education or, I mean, if you look at how people were dressed, a lot of women did not cover their hair. Now it's considered that you have to. A lot of women did wear pants. Now
well,
it's
not. So, but let me say one thing is there, and that came out with our discussion about what is this sounds like conservative Judaism, but isn't used at this time. I use a word from social science, indexical. Indexical means that terms can change over time, and the way that being Lamasha, anybody know what party did Abraham Lincoln belong to? Everybody knows that. The Republican Party. Whatever your politics, and I frankly, this is not, I'm not a political scientist, so I don't talk about these things. There's no question that in 1860, what the Republican Party meant is very different, I'll be safe, than in 2015.
And the Democratic Party?
Absolutely, absolutely. And these terms become indexical. They change, and who assumes that position can be very different. We have to be careful that when you talk about certain people or certain groups that went by one particular moniker at a moment in time, or even geographical, that it might mean something totally different at any point in time. So they divide us, certainly. They're freighted with all sorts of really interesting meanings. You mentioned Yeshiva University. I graduated Yeshiva College. I'm ordained by Yeshiva. I'm only Akar Datov to Yeshiva University. And it's a wonderful place. But there are challenges within any institution about what do these terms mean, absolutely. Yes?
I think with all of these excerpts indicate from the 50s and the 60s is a struggle really with the rise of conservative Judaism. If you go into source number 10, with Norman Lamb, we must build a great centrist mass of American Jews, take out Orthodox, great mass of American Jews, and that was the conservative movement.
That's what he's talking about.
In his heyday. Mm-hmm. And this is what was revolving around the growth of these huge mega synagogues in the suburbs. And also you had the Orthodox community condoning their yeshiva graduates going into, in Chicago in particular, what were then called traditional synagogues. So example, Rabbi Benzion Kaganov, when he came to Chicago as Ezer Israel in 1956, officiated over mixed seating, and there was a small nechisa in the room that only the old people went to in the basement. And this was conservative Judaism in Chicago.
Well, they used an Orthodox prayer
at that time.
They used an Orthodox prayer.
It was really a struggle.
Right.
And I think
the key was an Orthodox
prayer. Yeah, they used an Orthodox prayer book. So they didn't use a prayer book, which I think was fundamentally different.
And I think the rise of a modern Orthodoxy needs to be attributed to the rise of the Solomon Schechter Day School movement and the graduates, the Ramah Camp movement and the graduates, the children of conservative rabbis entering adulthood and becoming modern Orthodox. And you have a whole cadre of conservative rabbis of a certain era who, in their retirement and years, become affiliated with the modern Orthodox movement.
Rabbi Calver in Denver certainly is an example of this. And then, of course, you have the people. Rabbi Lamb certainly would never have went to Tarbid Das. I think it's the origins of any religious movement are complicated, and who prefigures into that is very complex. And certainly you talk about Camp Ramon, really started in Chicago, was the impetus, number one, to ratchet up Camp Moshava here. Rolling Prairie had already existed in the 1930s. I spoke in this room about this once. But NCSY is a response to USY. And so there's competition, and of course I think you're right, there are sort of converts to modern Orthodoxy, converts with these quotation marks, not to be polemical. Maybe two more comments, yes?
My impression is that conservative Judaism has really gone down. If that's true, what is the reason for the waning of their strength, of conservative Judaism as a group has kind of diminished over time?
That's a really, really interesting question that I'd love to answer if I had an hour and a half. Let's talk about that privately. Not because I'm afraid of engaging with the question, but it's a challenging one, and it's complicated.
The last quote you gave us is from 1986.
Yes.
This world today, 2019, is a totally different world. Here the rabbis were arguing about mixed seating.
Right.
Now in 2019, we have issues that face every family viscerally, like the lesbian, gay, and so on.
LGBT, yeah.
Like watching women from the conservative reform movement really become vital in America. So the issue of mixed seating pales in comparison to what the average American woman and Jew is looking at now. The issues are different. They're more vital, and so I think it's a totally different discussion now because the issues are just different than whether I sit near my husband or not.
Right.
This is like old. This is like reading American history. We are living in a different generation.
Could be. No, I absolutely do agree. I think we have to stop in a moment, but so maybe it's a good way to close. Is that new issues confront us? The terms, though, seem never to go away. The challenge for us in 2019, going on 2020 even, is to understand what worked, what didn't work, how does this usable past speak to us, but to learn from it. What's exciting is that there are new challenges. We have to embrace it, maybe to a certain extent differently, and to reorient us to a new world order, while at the same time, I do think that history does lend a particular vantage point to understand how did people grapple with it. Not necessarily how they did it well or how they did it not so well, But what were the issues? How did they take it on? And how can we learn from that to not make some of the mistakes, but also to build on what they did however many years ago? Thank you very, very much.